is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Incredible couple of weeks, people, as we get into the year end here. It's turmoil beyond belief here in Washington that is impacting everybody. But I think people's moods, for the most part, are very good. I think people feel a sense of, even though the insaneness is up there. So we have this big fight in Washington that is happening here. A lot of things going on. You have the FISA court slamming the FBI. You see Mark Meadows is retiring. We got all kinds of, and then you see that big story in the United Kingdom with Boris Johnson, the Brexit. That was huge. I mean, talk about big stories. That's probably the biggest in 50 years over there. As well, there was a big conference in Madrid, Spain on climate change. We've got a segment on that, climate change alarmism and what came out of that. Interesting information about the Chinese and the Paris Agreement I want to talk about with you as well today. And then a robust conversation on the year-end government clearance sale. I'll tell you more about that a little bit later on here. Let's get to the top stories here at the top of the program here. Colonel Jim Warshuk is here. He's retired from United States Air Force. He's a career senior intelligence and special missions officer, former deputy director of intelligence at U.S. Central Command, and served on the White House National Security Council staff as intelligence aide to the National Security Advisor. Ilana Friedman is here. Ilana is a veteran intelligence analyst. She's a political commentator, host of the Friedman Report here on America Out Loud. One of her recent books you want to get, Hamas, Care, and the Muslim Brotherhood, The Plot to Destroy America. Ilana is a great writer, and her books are all on Amazon or the America Out Loud bookstore. So Colonel Warshuk, so Speaker Pelosi says this, he gave us no choice, but very sadly and prayerfully, again, our founders' visions of our republic is under threat from actions from the White House, she says. Another Democrat out of California, Susan Davis, said, make no mistake, we are impeaching this president. He is impeaching himself. She says they're not really doing it. The president's doing it. And of course, Rashida Tlaib, she comes out and says, this is about protecting the future of our nation and our democracy from corruption, abuse of power, criminal cover-ups, and bribery. Have you ever seen anything quite like this, Colonel Warshuk?
The hypocrisy right there was just amazing. I like to talk about how people, particularly these members of the House, suddenly are embracing the Constitution and the founders, something they've pretty much thrown to the ground for the last 3 years or so or more, you know, even going back to the Obama administration. Suddenly that's all of a sudden means something. You know, this was a sham. It's probably or will be the greatest sham pulled over the eyes of Americans, particularly those who still don't recognize what's going on here. And it'll all come out. But
eventually.
Yeah, eventually. I'm confident it will. So now the wrangling is the lawyers are in two different rooms figuring out how to transfer this impeachment to the Senate. And it's interesting, there's really no process. The Constitution says once the House does the impeachment, it's handed over to the Senate for the trial. There's really no mechanism other than there's no formal thing. This thing that you're hearing about the House managers to see who they were, none of that is in the Constitution. That's all modern day bureaucracy built into the system. So the latest I heard this morning, and I said this earlier this week, in another venue, the Senate can pick it up right here. The impeachment is out in public. They can pick it up and run their trial hearing now. And I think that's what will probably happen after the holidays.
So you think McConnell could do that if he wants to, but that's still in question here. Let me play an audio clip for you both here. And this is interesting where the speaker goes off and talks about a rogue president. Listen to this, please.
We remain at an impasse. because, my friend, the Democratic leader continues to demand a new and different set of rules for President Trump.
Our founders, when they wrote the Constitution, they suspected that there could be a rogue president. I don't think they suspected that we could have a rogue president and a rogue leader in the Senate at the same time.
So, Ilana, as you hear that, she says the rogue president, she calls the president, but then she calls Majority Leader Mitch McConnell a rogue Senate leader.
I can't believe she actually went so far off the rails as to say that. The one who is rogue is Nancy Pelosi and all of the Democrats who are lining up behind her. You know, these guys are the ones who are reinventing the rules. They're recreating. They're the corrupt ones. They're the ones who are corrupting the whole process that is very, very significantly but slimly outlined in the Constitution. And it doesn't include all of these new rules that they have instituted, which have defined the investigation that they were running and now defines just the simple transfer of the documents of articles of impeachment. There is no formal process. They've made it up, just like they've made up the lies that they're using to condemn the president. They are the rogue players, and I have no sympathy or no patience for
it. Ilana, why do you think that, what's the real reason you think Pelosi is apprehensive, maybe, or just skittish about sending those papers over to the Senate?
I think she's in panic. I nothing that she's doing right now makes very much sense. Mm-hmm. And I think she is afraid of what is going to happen when the articles of impeachment get to the Senate, because they are going to be shown up, the Democrats in Congress are going to be shown up as having perpetrated a fraud. Mm-hmm. They have accused the president of a non-crime, two non-crimes, mm-hmm. and they're going to be, and all of their so-called evidence was hearsay with the exception of one witness who said the president didn't do anything wrong. So, you know, this is, and then, you know, it just compounds itself because it was Pelosi who said that this investigation or this process has been going on for 2.5 years, and yet the phone call was only in July. So what in the world were they doing for the rest of that
Yeah,
time?
She was caught on mic with saying that. You're right, Ilana. That was pretty something, wasn't it? That whole juxtaposition of, I know.
Yeah. She caught herself in a huge lie.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I think when we're looking at these people on the Democrat side, mm-hmm. I think we have to look at a whole bunch of fraudsters and liars and people who have done illegal things in order to get this president out of the White House. That's, and they're going to lose.
Right. Well, getting him out of the White House has been the plan. Now, these two impeachments that we're talking about here, one was abusing his power. The other one was the obstruction of Congress. The underlying reference point to all of this is that, and their argument really essentially is that the president is unfit for office. And if you remember, people, that has been said from moment number one, that he was unfit for office. So that is the underlying motive for getting him out of office more than anything else. Now, Jim, Mitch McConnell says this, and these are his words: Pelosi can't hold the articles hostage to negotiate the terms in the Senate. And to go further, the White House sees it as insane that Pelosi would hold the articles. What's the bottom line on all this, Jim?
Well, this is twofold. First, exactly what Ilana said, they don't have anything. And the biggest fear Pelosi and company have is when it goes to the Senate, it's a trial. And in that trial, they can call witnesses, they can call anybody they want, they can present anything they need to present to determine whether the president is unfit, whether the president has obstructed Congress or anything. They can go investigate that. And what they're afraid of is what's going to come out is the real story that we all know that's been in the media, depending on what media you listen to. Everything is already out there. So they're fearful that that's what's going to come out, and they know in the end, the Senate is going to, you know, end it. There will be no impeachment. The only thing the House can do is present articles of impeachment. Right. That's defined in the Constitution, and that's their role. That's
sure.
it.
Yeah.
The Senate conducts the trial. And here's the gray area, and this is really important. The argument of whether is he officially impeached if the articles do not
right.
go to the Senate for hearing. Mm-hmm. One lawyer this morning I was listening to said, well, they still haven't finished, this being the House, wrapping up what it is that they did. They left that on the table.
Right.
So technically, he hasn't been impeached from the standpoint
yeah.
of whether it's formally handed to Mitch McConnell on a silver platter from Nancy Pelosi, or it's just emailed over, or it's, you know, I suggested every American, you can go get a copy of what the impeachment says online. Every American should send a copy of it to Mitch McConnell. Every American, we're all citizens, will deliver it for Nancy Pelosi to Mitch McConnell if she doesn't have a way with doing it.
One of the really weird thing that happened here in the last few days, while all this was going on, I couldn't believe my eyes when I seen this. So as she's now leaving, they're all leaving Washington like the cockroaches that they are quickly in the dead of night as they do all this last year-end clearance sale, which I'll talk about later in the program, people. But on top of that, she goes ahead and invites the president to deliver his State of the Union on February 4th. I did a 10-take when I seen that thing. I said, I cannot believe the gall of this woman. And so she then invited the president to deliver the State of the Union on February 4th, like everything was just perfectly fine. Ilana, that was weird. Did you find anything strange about that, or was that just normal business to you?
I found everything strange about it. There's nothing sane that this woman is doing anymore.
But wasn't that weird?
Yes, it was very weird, and I don't understand the timing of it, not the timing of her delivery yeah. of the invitation, or the timing of February 4th, because that's in between the time that the mm-hmm. Senate is supposed to be hearing the trial of President Trump for all
yeah.
these non-crimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the whole situation is weird.
It's weird. Potentially, maybe the president, he's already accepted, by the way, but my advice to the president, maybe he would consider declining. And some people said, no, he can't do that. That's would go against precedent, or that would go against, you know, tradition. And I say, you know, at this point, exactly. I mean, at this point, we're already way past tradition. Does it really matter, Ilana? I mean, come on. I mean, if I was him, I would have said, no, thank you, Speaker. And I'd have done it in the Senate.
Yeah, you know, yes, okay, of course, and that would have been the way to do it. But I think that there is so much that's wrong with every single bit of process that the Democrats are involved in
right.
that nothing surprises me anymore.
That's right. All right, let me move it along here. Enough about the impeachment craze here. I want to talk about the FISA courts slamming the FBI. And this is a massive story that even got bigger than after the IG report came out. We've seen more than a smoking gun, but we've seen a lot of other things happen, including the court themselves coming out and saying to the FBI, slapping them. But then the question becomes, well, you know, like, okay, who forced the FISA court and the judge there to do, nobody had a gun to their head, did they? And we're speaking of this Judge Rosemary Collier here. And this is quite something, Colonel Warshak, this whole Horowitz thing. You want to talk about rogue a minute. Colonel, the FBI was rogue is what happened. And so let's talk about rogue. They went rogue. Horowitz calls him out, but then doesn't say that he stays short of the bias thing, which upset a lot of people, which typically his role is what it is, but a lot of people don't understand that. Now they come out and there's a lot of stuff being said about Rosemary, the judge there, Collier, correct? What's the story behind this FISA thing?
The level of corruption that this that perpetrated this is just astounding, and we're going to see more of that, you know, over the next 6 months to a year, I can guarantee it. But when the FBI sends over a FISA request for a warrant to authorize the NSA to go do electronic collection, eavesdropping, and the intelligence community to use whatever tools it has. The FISA court is also, you know, a decision maker where they can look at those, the material that's in those requests, and they can determine whether this is valid or not. And the judge here has the, they didn't do it. And the judge here allowed these very flimsy FISA requests, particularly the four that were the most important ones
that we know of
on going against the Trump campaign and Trump himself, were as fraudulent as you can get, and she still approved them. And so that's the problem. And granted, there are problems in the FBI, certainly, and the intelligence community for how they handled this. Right. But, you know, she had the authority to say, no, I'm not going to approve these because of this. Particularly when the one was based on the Steele dossier, which, you know, we all know was so bogus and made rubbish. up and rubbish. Exactly. So a lot of goes back on her. And, you know, I just found out in the last, 24 hours, she is going to be removed by the Supreme Court. She'll stay on until she retires as a member of the FISA court, but she will not be the lead judge on the FISA court any longer. And that's going to play out in the next month.
That's
or so.
Interesting. So there's some internal structure going on here. The thing about this is, Jim, is basically the FISA court, to break it down to layman terms for everybody. Jim, they were rubber stamping whenever the FBI said, jump. I mean, they jumped and they rubber stamped whatever, however, and what is any moment of the day, their success rate of approval for Pfizer, I believe, Jim, if I have it correct, I think is around like 97 or 98%. It's crazy, right? I mean, it's insane.
Well, you know, particularly in how it was being abused, and I have to say, and this is going to come out, it was massively abused by the Obama administration going all the way back to 2011, perhaps, or 2010, once the Obama folks got in place and started to learn all these capabilities that are out there, started to use it for their own purposes. And we know they used it illegally, abusively, against 40,000 plus Americans that we know of right now. And they're mostly probably prominent political figures, you know, across the country who they deemed as a threat to the Obama administration and the future of, you know, how the Democrats obviously watching them try to stay in power. So that will certainly come out. And, you know, I'm going to be talking in the next few weeks a lot about Mike Rogers and his role and what he's right. been doing behind the scenes, the former director of the NSA, who yeah. basically blew the whistle. If right. there's a whistleblower, it's him. And he is an honorable patriot for doing that. And he was canned by the Obama administration and the intel community when he was caught going over to tell Trump mm-hmm. what's going on right after he was elected.
Right,
he went to
right.
Trump Tower.
I want to move it along here. And I want to mention to folks, very interesting that happened this week. Congressman Mark Meadows is retiring from Congress. And the reason I bring that up is he was a pretty big figurehead in this whole Trump thing and the impeachment query and all of the things that went on. In any event, he says he will stay close. He will help the president in 2020. He may get involved in other ways. All right, Ilana, let's talk about this. The Federal Appeals Court rules Obamacare mandate is unconstitutional. So Federal Appeals Court just ruled down here Wednesday of this past week. They struck down this is probably the biggest pillar, the central pillar, if you will, Ilana, of Obamacare. They ruled, the rule was that the requirement that people have health care is unconstitutional. You can't force people or mandate them to do whatever. Now, health care is out of control. I mean, the cost has skyrocketed in this country. Talk to me about this individual mandate being unconstitutional and what the courts did here.
About a year ago, the courts decided that a judge ruled that Obamacare is unconstitutional. That was a year ago. Mm-hmm. And that was Obamacare in its entirety. And now we have this other thing, this mandate, which is that you force people to take this insurance, this medical care insurance, whatever it is, Obamacare. It was a lie from the beginning. It was a hoax from the beginning. It was a scam from the beginning. And yet Americans were forced to buy into it. And what the court said is that is not constitutional. The government cannot force an individual American to buy anything. This is crazy. I think Obamacare is going to be long gone by the time this ever gets anywhere.
It will be. And the problem is there's got to be a new something. I mean, well, we got to get back to privatizing healthcare, number one. We've got to bring tort reform to healthcare. We have to open up state lines for healthcare. And basically, with basic fundamental things, we could absolutely lower the cost of healthcare just by doing basic things. And then get government the hell out of it, because they can screw up a one-car funeral, people. We don't need them in our health care, for God's sakes. Let's talk about the liberal movement in the United Kingdom. They are also feeling sick today here because the Conservatives had a major, massive victory. Probably the biggest political shift in more than 40 years, they're saying, in the United Kingdom. And I'll tell you what, friends, nobody really seen this coming. And the reason is because there's been so many letdowns and problems. And so the UK lawmakers voted overwhelmingly, not only to approve Boris Johnson's Brexit plan, but we're talking this. And by the way, this is 3.5, many say, long years after 17.5 million British patriots voted to leave and exit the European Union, get the hell out of there. Well, now the parliament has embraced this last move, 358 to 234. Wow, Jim, this was a many people are obviously comparing this to Trump and the Trumpism or the form of American pride and patriotism in this country to British pride and patriotism in that country. What do you think?
Absolutely. This is, as I've been saying, is a strategic impact of the Trump effect. And, you know, we've seen this all over Europe, particularly in Eastern Europe, where these countries are electing Trump-like conservatives to, you know, the presidencies or the prime ministerships of these countries. And, you know, this occurred, you know, last year with Boris Johnson. And it was really interesting to watch as Theresa May was going out, how the end was over for the conservatives in Britain and the Labour Party would take over. And, you know, even a month ago, Brexit was doomed and there wasn't going to be enough votes in the parliament. And, you know, suddenly this week and all the doom and gloom was certainly a messaging campaign on the part of the left to stop this. They knew the momentum was there with Boris Johnson, and everything we've been hearing in Britain in the news has been, you know, basically put out by the liberal left-wing media over there and internationally, you know, I'll call it out, CNN and others, to try to dissuade the movement and the momentum that was going on. So, you know, it came out and was shown in flying colors this week with mm-hmm. with the decision that was made.
Yeah, it is. It's a big story. It's going to be a big story, one of the biggest of the year and could be of the century for Britain. I mean, it determined really the future direction of that country here. Well, listen, I want to wish both Colonel Jim Warshak and Ilana Friedman a very, very Merry Christmas as we come through the season here, and Happy Hanukkah to all. Again, the brilliance of these people you just heard and all of the experts on this platform should not be missed by anybody as we continue to bring you what we believe is the out loud truth. And like it, leave it, or love it, it is what is happening out there in the news cycle, people.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
So let's introduce you now here to Dr. Jay Lehrer is here. Dr. Jay Lehrer is a senior policy analyst with the International Climate Science Coalition. And he's the former science director of the Heartland Institute. Along here with Tom Harris is executive director of the Ottawa, Canada-based International Climate Science Coalition. Tom and Jay are two brilliant minds when it comes to this climate business. It is a religion for them, and they follow everything that happens in the industry to a T. So it's exciting always to have them on and hear their voices. Tom, you were at this climate conference in Madrid, and I was watching some of the news coming out of it. What I kind of found fascinating about the previous column write-ins that you and Jay had up here was that you said it was inspiring and it was a great success and opportunity, and that the conference was a huge failure. Now, I scratch my head when we say that. Explain what that means to us, please.
Yeah, sure. There were two conferences. There was the UN Conference of the Parties, COP25, right, the 25th conference since the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change was passed, and it was held in Madrid. We had a counter conference that was put on by the Heartland Institute. That one was a big success. The UN conference was not a success. And in fact, there's a big schism now between the climate alarmist extremists and just the normal UN climate alarmists. So they have a little civil war going on within the climate alarmist camp. Which is great, actually, because, you know, if you're fighting against any enemy and they have a civil war, that's going to make it easier to beat them. But our conference, which was put on by Heartland, involved many of the world's leading experts. William Happer, for example, a professor emeritus from Princeton University and previously one of Trump's science advisors, in which we talked about climate reality and energy reality. And people can check it out, actually, at climaterealityforum.com. They can watch the videos. I was one of the presenters, and I spoke about the problems with alternative energy. And of course, the problems are huge. I mean, most people think that these are really great energy sources, but in fact, they're extremely expensive. They're really diffuse. They're unreliable and environmentally damaging. Mm-hmm. And that was the topic of my talk.
Well, I like that because you're showcasing what, in other words, what the climate people are using as a crutch that's going to move us forward, which is what Dr. G always talks about as well, would weaken us in every aspect, in every element. And I'm glad you just cleared up. I remember there were two conferences. And I find it fascinating, by the way, as a reference point here, that Heartland would book, I assume they booked their conference there, obviously, because of the UN conference, correct, Tom? That was
Right. Yeah. And they've gotten hundreds of thousands of views.
Yeah, that is brilliant to do it that way. Really, really brilliant. Dr. Jay Lehrer, so what you talk about the biggest takeaway with these two conferences happening there. What do you think?
Well, my takeaway is that it got less press, less coverage. I would say 90% of the American public never even knew it was going on. It's become somewhat of a joke. Every year, about 24,000 bureaucrats from 192 countries assemble in some very nice location, stay in the best hotels, eat the best food at the expense of their citizens to talk about this absurd idea that increasing carbon dioxide from the use of fossil fuels was having a damaging effect on the earth. Their whole panic is really petering out. And as Tom said, they're even divided, you know, among themselves now, some being more strident than others. So I think the entire conference did them damage because it was ignored. They accomplished nothing. What they really wanted to do was institute more stringent controls on the use of fossil fuels to reduce carbon dioxide emissions. And they totally failed. They were unable to agree on anything. They got no press coverage. While Heartland put on a conference, a one-day conference of the best talks you'd ever imagined. Christopher Monckton, who was Margaret Thatcher's science advisor, gave, I don't know, about a 36-minute talk, which is absolutely brilliant. I think we've got to get it on your website so people can link to it. Christopher Monckton is a brilliant scientist and mathematician, fabulous speaker, and he absolutely put this absurd situation exactly where it belongs, the biggest fraud in history.
You say here, more importantly, he demonstrated, Monckton we're speaking about, that the evil, the Warman cult was created by causing inexpensive electricity to be withheld from developing countries, promoting continuing poverty. This was the risk he talked about. And then in turn, it led to a soaring population in poor nations while it is declining in the developed world. What I find interesting to people, the reason I say what I just said, is Monckton likened this climate cult, he calls it here, doing to the worst actions of Stalin and Hitler. So he's saying that's what this climate, that's pretty serious stuff, people, when you put it in that context. I mean, anybody can see the seriousness of this. Isn't the failure of this Madrid conference predicated upon the gross failure of the Paris Accords, Tom, to have any substance is what I would ask you. You know, the whole compliance thing, and really there was never any compliance to begin with in there. It was a joke.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, Monckton showed that the vast majority of energy increase across the world is occurring in countries who either don't have limits under the Paris Agreement or, in the case of the United States, are withdrawing. So the Paris Agreement is a failure. I mean, it will certainly not restrict energy usage. It will not restrict greenhouse gas emissions. And China, you know, it's interesting because in 2015, they actually promised that they would start cutting coal consumption. But in fact, in the last 2 years, China Daily reports that there was this increase in coal consumption in 2017 and again in 2018. And it says here, I'm just reading from China Daily, experts say the second consecutive annual increase suggests China may have deprioritized energy savings and emissions reduction owing to the pressures of its slowing economy. So China's not even doing what they promised Obama they would do back in 2015.
Now, Tom, don't I understand that China, correct me on this here, please, or not, that they overtook the United States as the world's largest annual emitter of greenhouse gases back in 2006, was it?
I'm not sure the exact date, but currently they emit about twice as much as the United States. So they're way ahead of the U.S. when it comes to greenhouse gas emissions. So the fact that they're exempt from any required reductions until 2030
is a joke.
Is crazy. And in fact, you know, even after that, it's pretty clear they're going to continue to increase their emissions because they have an out clause. They say in the UN agreement that the first and overriding priority of developing countries, which China is still considered, is poverty alleviation and development. So since coal is their cheapest source of power, there's no way they're going to reduce their emissions.
Right. And then you have to shake your head, people, when you hear all of this and you say, well, but then why would a president of a United States here want push an agreement like that on America in the way that it did? And like most agreements and most things, as I tell you all, they're not in the favor of the American people. And that's been part and parcel of the problem of what Trump has had to go up against. So this is a big, big talk, what we're talking about here. I want to move it along, Jay, and I want to talk to you about this Monckton fellow and something else interesting that to me came out of this conference, if you will, here. You talk about the meeting between President Obama and communist Chinese leaders prior to the Paris Agreement, where President Obama promised to exempt China from hard targets under the agreement, which Tom was just saying, if they would support the agreement. Now, just follow me along carefully here, people. If they would support the agreement, they would get a pass, in other words, we're saying. I mean, this is crazy, people. But in contrast, the targets imposed on the United States would be devastating, as it would eliminate our use of fossil fuels. We'd go back to the Stone Age, people, is what would essentially what happened. Thereby, you say here, Jay, allowing China to become the world's most powerful nation. And then you scratch your head and you say, what?
Well, Malcolm, that's exactly right. That's what I wrote in an article that I think you have published. And I did a lot of research into the deep state, and it came out very clear of what Obama did. He felt that the backing of China of the Paris Accord would carry a lot of weight for the accord to be passed, which of course it was. And by exempting them, they didn't have to worry about it till 2030. They could do whatever they wanted. But of course, if the United States had to abide by it and reduce fossil fuels, China would surge ahead of us as the most powerful country in the world. Obviously, President Trump would have none of it and has signaled that he is pulling out of it, and that will happen officially within the next year. And China has just gone about their merry way. They did increase wind and solar as a facade to cover over the fact that they are building a new coal-fired plant every single week. And as Tom pointed out, 2017 and 2018, their use of coal and their emissions have increased, which they will forever, really forever, because they want to keep growing their economy, and they're smart enough to know that wind and solar has no real value to them.
That's right. The article that Jay just referenced, people, is called, the title of it is Climate Change Alarmism is a Despicably Anti-Human Ideology. That was written from Tom Harris and Dr. Jay Lehrer. And that is on the front page right now of AmericaOutloud.com. You'll see it right there in the top stories, people. And you can go read it yourself. There's a lot of information in there and a lot of links and stuff. So you can go research the conferences. I encourage you to find out more about this and to share that information out there with we the people, and let folks know what's really going on here. Let's take the last moment here, and let me ask you, Tom, first. So let's put our crystal ball hats on a moment here as we move into a new year here, 2020, just ahead here. And as we look at the new year, what do you see ahead over this next year for the future of the climate change business? Tom, what's ahead?
Well, I think we're going to see governments like Canada allying themselves with the extremists. And, you know, they're going to bring in policies that indeed will cripple our economy in Canada. Thank God Trump is your president, because he's not going to do that for the U.S. But I think we are going to see Germany, Canada, quite a few countries starting to align themselves more and more with the extremists. And, you know, this is really bad in those countries where the liberals actually control the government like they do in Canada. Right. Happily, the U.S. is not following that route. We're going to see China continue to pretend that they're increasing their use of solar and wind. And, of course, they are in an absolute sense. But the actual amount of coal being used, as we said, is actually increasing. And I think we're going to see more and more people starting to realize that wind and solar are not the answer. And, in fact, it's interesting that Robert Kennedy Jr. actually said that when you build wind stations, wind power stations, you're really building natural gas, because, of course, you have to back it up. And people are coming to realize that. So, indeed, the whole idea that wind and solar are going to help us, if you believe we have to reduce greenhouse gases, is going to become revealed as wrong.
Interesting.
And I think also people are going to start noticing the bird kills. For example, the Altamont Pass wind farm in California, they've calculated an average of 116 golden eagles are killed there every year.
Wow.
And if you extrapolate that number, you find that well over 3,000 golden eagles have been killed since the facility was built in the 1980s. And I'm doing my best to publicize that, because if you're a conservationist, you should hate wind turbines.
Wow. That is some interesting information, Tom. Wow. Jay, let's talk about your point of view, please, for moving into 2020. What's ahead for the climate change business, please?
Well, the insanity of the extremists will continue, but I think Tom made a really good point. The recognition of the public that wind and solar is not going to be a useful alternative to burning fossil fuels, I think that will increase. People more and more will see all the problems with wind and solar, which Tom pointed out in a brilliant presentation in the Madrid conference. So the insanity will increase, as Tom points out. The liberal governments will continue to try to limit their use of fossil fuel. And so the fraud will continue. but the public support for it of just regular folks who really are not opposed to capitalism and desiring to install socialism, that is going to decline. And I do believe that Trump should win easily in 2020. And then I think he'll probably be willing to deal a little more with the climate change delusion than he was in his first term. So I'm optimistic. Ultimately, we're going to see cooling in the next 5 or 10 years, and it may be necessary before this whole craziness ends that we actually understand that the sun's energy is diminishing and the temperature average of the Earth will probably decline 1 or 2 degrees Fahrenheit about 10 years from now.
Fascinating. Wow. Time to invest into that beach house down near the sun somewhere, maybe, people, huh? So much for that global warming business after all here. Tremendous thank you and a Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah and celebration here to Dr. Jay Lehrer, Tom Harris. Just think of how much you just learned right now in this segment. All of the write-ins can be found on AmericaOutloud.com. Year-end government clearance sale. If you had your druthers, what would you clearance off in the feds, huh? Talk about bureaucracy, people. More Viewpoints in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@AmericaOutloud.com.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Let's talk next about the year-end government clearance sale and what we have to do to move this thing forward here. Welcome on our panel of experts here. Ava Armstrong is here. Ava's a political commentator, radio personality, and an extraordinary author here at America Out Loud. She writes about America's heroes, our military, law enforcement, and which is a great segue to Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro. Joe is a retired police lieutenant, is director of school security, master trainer and owner of True Security Design, host of Chasing Justice here on America Out Loud, 3 p.m. weekdays, friends, is a great program. You want to listen into that. And joining us out here is Dennis Santiago. Dennis is an American strategist, philosopher, patriot. He focuses on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. Well, let's call it a bit of a stampede as the bureaucrats are leaving Washington to get back home for their holidays with their family and their friends and what have you, right? But there were a few things on the agenda, just like Santa Claus goes through his list and checks his list once, twice, and see who's naughty, who's nice. Who do you think would be naughty in the Washington circles, right? Well, the list of things like, well, you know, impeaching the president before we leave, and then let's not pass those papers over to the Senate, right? Sure. And then let's pass the USMCA deal that's been on the desk for coming on a year almost. And then let's pass a $1.4 trillion spending appropriations bill. And you get the point, people. I mean, this is kind of how it works. It's like all of a sudden, Ava, let's start this off here. It's like all of a sudden, it's like, to me, it's like a last minute Hail Mary. Where have they been all of this time? Have they been governing? Have they been legislating? Or have they been impeaching?
Well, this is kind of like the parents going away for a vacation and leaving the home to the children to run. That's the way I feel about Congress right now. I don't think there are many adults in the room, and the few adults that are in the room are fighting like crazy to save our republic. You know, guys like Jim Jordan and, you know, Doug Collins and Brad Cook.
And Mark Meadows, by the way, which we just talked about early on in the program, is leaving. You see that?
Yes. I don't think he's leaving per se. He's leaving his seat, but I think he will be a strategic player in the administration moving forward.
Dennis, what do you make of all of this? A quick hurry. Let's get it all done. Again, I consider this like a Hail Mary as they're focused on impeachment. Pelosi then says, I'm not going to send the papers over. There's some weird stuff going on in Washington.
Oh, yes, there is. And it is extremely interesting. So here's, it's Christmas time, right? So what do you do? You need to bring presents home for Christmas because Washington is all about bringing bacon and pork back to the true. District. That's how politics works. What they're bringing back now is the people that want to go home and say, hey, you know, I voted for impeachment. A lot of these people are a little bit worried that they may not have done the right thing, right? Because the whole reason for this whole delay is because people are worried. So they want to go gauge their districts and they need to bring stuff home to say, hey, we actually did something this year.
So do you feel there's buyer's remorse with that group you're speaking about?
It's not quite buyer's remorse. I think Pelosi's got a walk of shame day. I mean, you know, she let this party happen and the party turned out to not be so good because, you know, when she had to turn the keys over to the McConnell, it's like, I don't really want to give you the keys because the car's dirty, right? So now you got this whole fire sale thing of legislation passed at the last minute. And the big winner in that is that pretty much most of Trump's agenda has turned up right at the end of the year. Yeah. And who's going to benefit from that? Well, I think the way that's going to actually work out is you're going to start to see the big worry for these guys is how many Democratic seats are going to get lost in 2020 because of their shenanigans in 2019. And I am seeing a lot of people positioning to run for office in these districts. Some of them that are flaky, you know, recent turnovers from Republican to Democrat. So they're vulnerable, and others even in deep, strong Democrat districts where people are going enough is enough. So they know they got a coattail problem. They got a weak presidential candidate board. It's not a happy Christmas the left of aisle. And I think it's a much happier Christmas for the GOP.
Lieutenant Pangaro, let's pick it up there now. You've seen a very odd political season we've all seen here over this last legislative session when the main, not only the main focus, but really the only focus has been to impeach the president out of office. Now, you speak about this on a regular basis on your programs and your write-ins, but it does seem a little odd right now where Pelosi, I think people are questioning her, has she set up her party for failure coming into 2020 in the election? Because what do they really have to look forward to at this point, Pangaro?
I think what you're seeing is the bigger chess game. People are not worried about governing the country. It's all a chess game. Exactly what Dennis was saying, these people have to go home to their districts, so they voted because Pelosi would hold things back from them if they didn't fall in line. But now they have to go home and try and work that out with the people who were in Trump areas that they happen to switch over to Democrat. We have the people of our country that maybe finally are starting to see how this whole process was not about something that was real, but how we've all been played here yet again. Only the fact that she will not turn it over to the Senate now has got to open some people's eyes. And I've been talking to people who are in the Democrat sphere, and they're like, I just don't understand why she wouldn't do that. I mean, it was important, right? This had to be done because he's going to kill us all. He's going to ruin our country. But now we're going to slow down. So there's another lie. There's another sense of what is going on here. And I think people are starting to pick up on that this is a game, and the losers in the game could potentially be all of us. On the other side of that, you're talking about 2020 and where we're going. You're right. We're getting the Trump agenda through, which is making the country stronger. The economy is roaring. I know I'm looking forward to 2020. So it's really a very strange position to be in. We see this nonsense of what they're doing in Washington, which is completely fake and illegitimate. But at the same time, things are going pretty well for you know, financially for us.
Well, let's talk about that, Joe. The first thing is when you say a game, let me talk about that, a reference of a game. So what came to my mind is this. I'm thinking like a poker game almost. And I think the fact that Pelosi is not sending the actual impeachment over to the Senate and has held that back, to me, Joe, that she has just showed her hand, back to what you were just saying about the Democrats and the various people who are kind of scratching their head at this point, just saying, well, what is really the head of the, she's a, you know, senior in the Democrat Party. What is the real motive here if she's not following through with what the Constitution demands, which is, you know, you've got to send this over to be for the Senate to take up a trial. They are the jurors of this. They
don't try the case again.
They don't try it again, right?
I have to ask you a question, though. Why is Nancy Pelosi holding this up? Because she's trying to impeach Vice President Pence, okay? You have to understand what they're doing here. And you also have to understand that if people are telling you, we are better than that, we can't stoop to their level. Mm-hmm. We must remain civil.
Right.
We are dealing with terrorism within our own government, okay? You have to understand where we are right now on this. That's the thing. We're talking all around the edges about what might happen. Mm-hmm. We have to fight back.
I'm going to jump right onto your point there, because what we've seen in the past with Kavanaugh, we've seen with Trump, every time something fails, they pull something else out of the hat.
That's right.
They might have something planned for after this holiday that, oh, guess what? We just found out he did this. That's going to, now we have the impeachment already done. They wind everybody up, get the media going, and now maybe you flip a few people over to, okay, maybe we should vote for this because we didn't know he did this, because they'll just make something else up.
Right, right. Well, it does seem now, let's take a look at what you just say there. It does seem to anybody who's looking at this that I think people, Joe, are waiting for the other shoe to drop. In other words, that's what you're saying. Like, yeah. In other words, you start to ask yourself, how insane is this? Or do they by chance have a strategy in place? Now, most people would say there's probably not a strategy in place. Dennis, they're probably saying, well, Nancy is making it up as she goes. So here's the question. Is she making it up as she goes sincerely? Or do you think that, I mean, my guess is potentially they're in back rooms right now discussing the how, the what, the where, and how do we shift him out of office? What do you say?
Well, of course they're just discussing that. And, you know, and in a poker game, you know, they were playing a poker game where, you know, twos, jacks, and red kings are wild, right? And but that's not the game that's actually being played. It's straight draw. And I think the big worry here is that there will be new things that will surface. They will be very explosive, and they won't go, and they know they're coming, right? You know, you got Barr and Durham there, and they're picking a gun out of the drawer, and they're getting ready to point it at Brennan and Comey. You know, you can hear the telegraphing in the news that is coming out that these guys, the people are calling Brennan a ringleader at this point. And so if you've got that coming in early 2020, I were Nancy Pelosi, the real calculus I'd be making if I were in her office would be, geez, you know, if this stuff is gonna happen, do we want to start maintaining minimum safe distance from all of that? And because we need to position the Democratic Party to be the loyal opposition as opposed to the disloyal opposition that we thought we were. And how do we spin it so that we say, hey, we were snookered too? You know, there all kinds of things can happen, and we have no idea which direction this thing is going to spin next. But we're playing a very dangerous game of spin the bottle right now.
Yeah, that would be how we got snookered too. That's an interesting perspective to put there. You know, what we're discussing right now is that other shoe that may or may not drop. Ava, you think that we are in, I think your sense is we're in a heap of trouble coming into January, and the way it's all played out right now coming through the season, we still have now, we have the big John Durham report, which is what Dennis was just kind of hinting toward there. We've just seen the Horowitz aha moment with the whole Pfizer thing. The Judge Collier came out on that. We talked about that early in the show with Warshak and all of that. There's a lot of moving pieces here, and a lot of this is going to come out in the new year. We don't know how it's going to play out, do we?
No, and we haven't been at this perilous point since the Civil War, since Abraham Lincoln was president. So this is something that it's not to be laughed at. It just really bothered me that people would put on social media, Democrats, these radical Democrats, mm-hmm. and they're laughing and saying, Mary, impeach Miss. I mean, seriously? These are citizens of our country celebrating this? I mean, this is a very somber, sad moment for everyone. It should be for every American citizen.
Well, when you say it's somber and you say it that way, I would almost disagree with you in the way that I think when you look at the president's body language and his interactions, Ava, with his rallies and with his talks, and he seems at peace with a lot of it. And quite frankly, the successes, listen, what I want to put this thought into your mind, it's like a split screen. I mean, the president has had one of his most successful runs as president in the last certainly couple of weeks. I mean, success after success after success after success, while this little cabal over here is trying to get him out of office. And it's a split screen sort of event that we're looking at in this country here. And so I'm not sure a lot of people are somber, quite frankly, Ava.
Well, I am. I literally cried when they announced his impeachment. I literally cried. And my husband looked at me and he said, I'm so sorry this is happening. He said, I wish I could make it better. And I said, no, there's only one person that can make it better. And that will be Donald Trump. And he'll win in the end. He will prevail in the end. Yeah. But it's just so sad to see this country come to this point. It really is.
Well, and you know, on that note, friends, here, if you listen here to the voices here of Ava Armstrong, Dennis Santiago, Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro, let me first tell you this on a programming note. The conversation we're having right now, where Ava ends it with the fact that she literally had tears in her eyes and was sad and speaking to her husband about where the Republic is. And she mentioned being in a somber mood. And there's part of the nation who would look at it that way. But then, again, that split screen I just mentioned to you with the successes the country is having, it's an odd time. But, you know, on the other side, people, maybe it's a time to do some cleansing in America. Maybe it's time to dust old glory off a little bit here, yeah? And get ready for the next 230 some odd years, yeah? And maybe that's what we need to be doing next year. I don't know. What we're going to do is invite you back on Monday on The Voice of a Nation, and we'll continue this conversation in a bigger format, talk about Trumpism, how Trump has transformed the Republican Party, and we'll pick it up there and really talk about the bureaucracy of government, the scope and size of government. What do we want to look forward to in 2020? And where do we go next as a republic? We'll have that conversation again with the three voices you just heard here. Armstrong, Santiago, and Pangaro will all be back with us on Monday on The Voice of a Nation, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. You'll hear that on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. Want to take a moment now and thank all of you for being with us throughout this year and being part of the journey here at America Out Loud. We're excited here and getting ready for a new year, back to this 2020 vision I talk about here. We see a lot happening in the new year, and we thank you for making us a part of your home and your conversations here. And we're blessed, really, to see the growth we've had over the year and to see what's going to happen next year. We thank you very much for that opportunity here. I wish each of you the merriest of Christmases, happy Hanukkah, celebration, whatever you celebrate in your life. Happy holidays to each and every one of you there. Now, I will be off for the next many weeks here, and I will see you late January. Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro will be guest hosting this program here over the next many weeks here on Viewpoint this Sunday as I step off of this moment here. And friends, again, it's all back at AmericaOutLoud.com as we march forward into a great new year in 2020. Thank you again for being here and being part of this whole journey with us here at America Out Loud. Friends, it's time to get involved and get loud.